Hello, everyone. This is the CircuitPython weekly meeting for Monday, March 9th, 2026. It's the time of the week where we get together to talk about all things CircuitPython. I'm Dan, and I'm sponsored by Adafruit to work on CircuitPython. CircuitPython is a version of Python designed to run on tiny computers called microcontrollers. CircuitPython development is primarily sponsored by Adafruit. So if you want to support Adafruit and CircuitPython, consider purchasing hardware from adafruit.com. This meeting is hosted on the Adafruit Discord server. You can join anytime by going to adafru.it/discord. We hold the meeting in the CircuitPython dev text channel and CircuitPython voice channel. This meeting typically happens on Mondays at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, except when it coincides with the U.S. holiday. In the notes doc, there's a link to the calendar you can view online or add to your favorite calendar app. We also send notifications about upcoming meetings via Discord. If you would like to receive these notifications, ask us to add you to the @CircuitPythonistas Discord role. As I mentioned, there's a shared notes document that right now is a Google Doc that accompanies the meeting and recording. You can contribute to this document beforehand. The final notes document includes timestamps to go along with the video, so you can use the doc to skip around and view the parts of the video that interest you most. The meeting tends to run 30 to 60 minutes. After each meeting, we post a link for the next meeting's notes document to the CircuitPython dev channel on the Adafruit Discord. Check the pinned messages in that channel to find the latest notes doc, so you can add your notes for the following meeting. If you wish to participate but cannot attend, you can leave hub reports and status updates in the documents for us to read during the meeting. Okay, that's the boilerplate. The meeting is held in five parts, and we'll begin. I'll explain each part as we get to it. So the first part is community news, which is a look at things, all things sort of Python and Python and hardware in general in the community. It's a set of items chosen from our Python and microcontrollers newsletter, which I'll tell you about later. Okay, so let me take a timestamp. Here we go for community news. First item is Rovari Circuit Studio, a new CircuitPython IDE. Rovari Circuit Studio is a free and open source CircuitPython IDE built as part of the Rovari Embedded Platform project. And there are some links in the notes document to a Discord and to our Discord where it's discussed, and also a YouTube link, which is an introductory video. It has everything you expect from you, to quote from the description, it has everything you expect from you and more. Standard features include auto board detection, a code formatter, error line highlighting and traceback, built-in code snippets, a library manager with automatic bundling, and version matching, a serial plotter with auto format detection and safe file writes with fsync, so no more silent code.py corruption in Windows. It has a safe to remove indicator, so if you know if it's safe, unplug the board or not. Its offline desktop application is currently in Windows, but they're making it cross-platform and they are adding support for BLE and Wi-Fi for ESP boards. It aims to support all boards, but Rovari is centered on RISC-V. RISC-V boards are first-class citizens, and CircuitPython is first-class, not an afterthought. So this sounds very interesting. It's great to have yet another CircuitPython IDE. And I encourage you to take a look at it, and we'll be tracking it as it's being worked on. Next step is about the MicroPython triage team. So on the MicroPython forums, Anson Mansfield writes about the MicroPython triage team, goals and processes. And the reason for this is that right now there are 1,392 open issues in MicroPython and 495 OPRs. Some are date back as far as 2014. So the idea is to get a group of people together to triage this backlog into a series of more achievable short-term triage goals. So read the description in detail. That's in the notes document. And there are some links in the notes document. Right now, those links are broken, and I'll fix that before I post that. Okay, so let me explain where these news items came from. They came from the Python and the Microcontrollers weekly newsletter, which is a CircuitPython community-run newsletter that we email every Monday. It's edited by Anne. Thanks very much, Anne. There's a link to the archives of the newsletter. We very much appreciate you contributing to the newsletter. Email cpnews@adafruit.com with your news item. It covers CircuitPython, Python, and MicroPython development. So anything that you think would be an interesting community and you might post, say, in Discord yourself or something, send it to the newsletter if you'd like to see it there. Okie dokie. Next up, major section is the state of CircuitPython, the libraries, and Blinka. This section is a quantitative overview of the entire project. It gives us a chance to look at the health of the project separate from our status updates. So we'll talk about the CircuitPython project overall and then separately discuss the core libraries and Blinka. So first up, overall what's been happening is that in the last week, there have been 15 pull requests merged by 7 authors. All are well-known people, and they were reviewed by 4 reviewers. And there were 5 issues closed by 3 people and 5 opened by 5 people. And next up, Scott, are you busy? Or are you able to read the core?
I think I can.
Okay, thanks.
So stats for the core, we have 7 pull requests merged from 4 different authors. Foamy Guy, Dan, and myself, Weblate's the 4th, that's a bot. We had 2 reviewers, myself and Dan. We had 25 open pull requests, so we're right at our 1-page goal. Issues-wise, we had 3 closed issues by 2 people, 5 open by 5 people, so we're up 2, for a total of 847 open issues. We have 8 active milestones. 10.1x has 4 open issues. 10.2 has 1. And then we have 1 issue not assigned a milestone as of the time these stats were taken. So we are, I still think we're keeping up to date as in terms of issue tracking. And that's where we are with the core.
Okay, thank you. All right, next up is the library section, which Tim will tell us about.
All right, thanks, Dan. This section covers all of the CircuitPython libraries. We have those hosted on GitHub under 2 main library bundles. The Adafruit library bundle has 384 driver libraries in it currently. The community library bundle has 174 in there, so combined there is a total of 558 libraries right now that support CircuitPython. Across the Adafruit bundle this week, we had 5 pull requests merged by 3 different authors, thanks to Tectric, Liz, and myself. We had 2 reviewers, thanks to Scott and myself. Of the pull requests that were merged, it was a couple of them up around the 35-day mark. Those were the oldest ones, and then the newest ones were 1 day old, so brand new. That leaves us right now with 38 pull requests that are open across the Adafruit bundle. The oldest one is a draft that is right about 1,300 days currently. The newest one is 7 days old as of the time of these stats. Issues-wise, we had 2 closed issues over the past week by 1 person. No new issues opened up. And that leaves us right now with 770 open issues. And there are 2 of them that are labeled as good first issues. You can find those too, as well as all of the rest, over at the website circuitpython.org/contributing, which is where you should head if you want to start getting involved in the CircuitPython project. When you first load that page, what you'll find is a list of open pull requests. These are links over to GitHub. They're waiting for a person to come along and review the code. That could be you if you would like to get involved with the project. You don't need special permission or anything like that. You can just load up those links, click through, read about what the proposed change is, look over the code for spelling, syntax, logic, anything like that. If you have the hardware for it, you can test it out on your hardware. And then just leave a comment there on GitHub letting us know what you found when you looked over the code. Does it look good to you? Are there things that stood out that you think need to be changed? That sort of stuff. If you did have hardware, let us know in that comment how it went when you tested it out. Leave information like your version of CircuitPython and what kind of outcome you got when you tested it. If you get comfortable with that process and would like to get leveled up to join the official review team that we have there on GitHub, we can work with you to get you added to that. If you would like to start contributing some of your own code, you can also do that from the same page. Again, it's circuitpython.org/contributing. If you click over to the issues link along the top, you will find a very similar looking page. It's a big list of links over to GitHub again, but these ones represent issues. They don't have a proposed change yet. They're waiting for a person to come along who would like to actually submit that proposed change to resolve whatever the issue it is. It might be fixing a bug or adding a new feature enhancement or something like that. If you would like to get involved but don't have experience with Git and GitHub, we have a guide that covers the process of using those to contribute. We also have folks who are here on the Discord who are happy to help get you spun up. So if you are trying to contribute or review on GitHub, you're having trouble with any part of the process, let us know here on GitHub, on Discord. Let us know what kind of trouble you're running into. We would be happy to help you out. And I will leave you with new libraries in the last 7 days. We have new ones, the XTE Ink X4 and the SSD 1677. Shout out to Liz for getting those display driver and the helper for that XTE Ink in this week. And that's what we have for libraries. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Okay. Next up, I'm going to tell you about Blinka. So what is Blinka? It's a compatibility layer for sort of Python and single board computers like Raspberry Pi. So it lets you run code that's written in sort of Python, and it's actually going to be running in regular Python on those computers. And those Blinka is a wrapper that emulates a lot of the hardware-centric features that CircuitPython provides. So in the past week, there were three pull requests merged by two authors and reviewed by two people. There are right now 21 open pull requests. There were 0 issues closed and 0 open. And there are right now 146 open issues. And the current number of supported boards under Blinka is 166 different boards. So that's it for the state of CircuitPython, and now we'll move on to the major section called Bug Reports. Bug Reports is a chance to highlight folks in the CircuitPython community and beyond for doing awesome things. I'll start, and then I'll go down the list of other Bug Reports alphabetically. If you're a text only or in a meeting, I'll be happy to read your notes when I get to them in the list. Okay. So first of all, Bob, this week, I just have a group hug for everybody. A lot of contributors. I was going to single out people who write issues and people who do debugging, but there are a lot of things that are going to happen. So thanks very much, everyone. And next is Tim.
All right. Thanks, Dan. I also just have a hug report this week. Thanks to everyone in the community, everyone who watches the live streams, who contributes on the Discord, who works on stuff on GitHub. It's all part of the community and very much appreciated. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And next up is Scott.
Hello. Two hugs for me. One for Liz for doing the XTE Ink build. I've got one of those, and I'm excited to try CircuitPython on it. And then also to PPSX, who is doing QSPI display support. They're doing it via LLM agent, which has caused extra back and forth. But I think there's a human behind it, and they've managed to get everything where I want. So thanks to them for persisting. It's so easy to get fire an agent off and then send it off, but actually having the persistence to get it all the way checked in is awesome. So thanks to PPSX for that.
Okay, thanks, Scott. And finally, I will read extra contribution. Thanks to Tandu, that's Scott, for the Zephyr native syntax infrastructure in the core. Very helpful to reference for re-implementation as a GitHub action workflow. And then a group hug. Okay, so next step is status updates. It's our time to tell folks what we've been up to individually in the past week. I'll start, and then we'll go through the list as before. You can take a couple of minutes to talk about what you've been doing and what you plan to be doing. And if there's a discussion that seems to get long, we can move it in the week if we want. Right, so as I said, I'll start. So I've been mostly fixing bugs. I fixed an Atmel SAMD bug that caused a crash when, usually on the second time when you were trying to use an SPI bus on Atmel SAMD to run a full wire display. It's kind of obscure, but it was a recent, it's a bug that's been around for a while, but it manifested more recently. And I expect to put that in the, I'm going to be doing a CircuitPython 10.1.4 release today or tomorrow, which includes that bug fix and one or two other ones. Then I'm working on a kind of a multi-pronged PR that is trying to improve USB SD card access, which was not so reliable. Sometimes caused crashes, sometimes didn't work. There were a variety of things that were a problem here. One was that the SD card access was using SPI. If there was a display that was also using SPI, the SPI display was not necessarily locking the bus properly, so that's fixed. Also, SD card, the way it was written is that it would talk to the SD card and then wait forever for an answer. So if something went wrong to the SD with the SD card, then it might loop indefinitely. Another problem was on Espressive, there was a separate task that was running USB, and it was running at a high priority, which kind of locked out the other SPI bus, except that sometimes you'd get priority inversion, and then that would lock out the USB task, so that was a problem. And then another problem, which wasn't a problem, which was very confusing, is that like I had an Atmel board that had an SD card and an Espressif board, and the Espressif board was much slower, and I couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. Why was it so slow? And it turned out it was because the card was much larger. It was a 16 gig card, and on my Atmel board, it was a 64 megabyte card, and so those are completely different sizes, and there's much less data to read. So the 64 megabyte card appeared on the host computer much more quickly. So that says something about making sure that your test conditions are exactly the same. Finally, I've started working on merging MicroPython 1.27. That'll also include a merge of 1.26. We've already merged 1.25. So I've just started, but it doesn't look like it's going to be a big issue to do this merge. So we'll be able to catch up. All right, next up is Tim.
All right, thanks, Dan. I last week fixed an issue with full width glyphs that were only showing the left half of the glyph in LVFont.io. So if you happen to use a custom font in the terminal that showed full width glyphs, they would get cut in half. And that is now fixed and merged in. I installed this intercept signal dashboard thing on a Raspberry Pi and started learning a little bit about SDR stuff, which is what this dashboard is. It plugs in with a USB SDR antenna, and then it can show you a bunch of different things that it's able to find from the radio frequencies around you. I haven't poked very far into it. I did see that it can pick up transponders from airplanes, so you can kind of see when there's airplanes that are nearby you, which is kind of cool. And there's lots of other stuff in there that I will dig into as I get time. But for now, I did kind of set that one aside and started working on a couple of CircuitPython drivers, which is my next item here. CircuitPython driver for the APD-S9999. Is functional and checked into GitHub, but I am still working through issues with the actions. And then I will work on the guide for that one, and I have the AS7343 up next as well to do. One of the interesting things I've been doing for this driver is working with a agent running on a Raspberry Pi and getting it set up to where it's got a microcontroller plugged in and it can run kind of like write and run its own tests for the sensor. So it's a light sensor with this device, APDS 9999. So I have the sensor pointing back at the NeoPixels on the device. And then I have a agent that is writing different tests that test the different functionalities of the sensor by setting the NeoPixels somewhere and then getting readings from the sensor and validating that they show as expected, which is kind of a cool sort of hardware test validation loop going on. But that is what I'm up to. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Next up is Scott.
Hello. I am home with a sick toddler. She's got a tummy thing, so I think she'll probably be good to go tomorrow. So I should be in the office tomorrow. Knock on wood. I merged in heap stat tracking into native sim. So if you just run anything in the native sim and get the Perfetto trace output, it will show you the heap usage over time, which is helpful for tracking how much like an import would take or just how much is used just to run something. I'm also merged in BLE connect and disconnect into native sim. I'm doing a bit of a detour into containers. This is one of those things where it's like, it's good software engineering practice that I've never had the brain space to pick up and really understand. But I've been thinking about isolated stuff for running LLMs. And then also dev containers have come up when getting new contributors going and then also using it to speed up GitHub Actions. So being able to do certain commands once and then just copying images over instead of having to do the commands and hitting servers every time. So I'm poking at that. Not only is the LLM stuff causing me to think about that, but the display work that I have of getting Zephyr displays going is blocked by the fact that there's an SDL version mismatch between my local dev environment and GitHub Actions, and I don't know how to like get it building in both places, which is kind of annoying. So containers will help me solve this by having some isolated environment for doing this both locally and on GitHub Actions. So I'm blocking those two things. And then Claude did continue working on BLE. So the next step I had Claude do for BLE was server, which is being able to create a server and have something access it. So it claims it's done based on tests, but I haven't had a chance to look at that yet. So that's I'm always trying to have one BLE ball in the air so I can get BLE implementation moving forward. So that's my BLE ball, and then containers and Zephyr display. So that's what I'm working on.
All right, thank you, Scott. Okay, so finally, I'll read Patrick. He says, completed my initial implementation of a data classes library for Python. That's very interesting. Data classes is something that was added to regular Python and Python. It would be interesting to see how that actually has done it for Circuit Python. And then, prototyped running Zephyr native sim tests for my data classes library. I created a reusable GitHub Actions workflow for actually running the Zephyr simulator and reading the output. Beginning the process of creating additional actions built on top of the reusable simulator workflow, I'll open a PR with a proof of concept to an example in the repository so folks can add your thoughts. So this sounds really interesting. It's like talking about using a workflow and using a native sim to actually test something immediately that we want to test, which is really great. Okay, so that's it for status updates. There's nothing for in the weeds, unless somebody has anything to add. So I'll just wrap up now. Just a reminder, the next meeting is a week from today on Monday, March 16th, at the usual time of 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern and 1 a.m. U.S. Pacific time. And note that the U.S. switched to daylight saving time yesterday, which is different from the calendar for doing that in Europe and other places. So if you're not in the U.S., check what time it really is here. All right, that's it. Thanks very much. Thanks for your everyone's patience from the beginning while I was dealing with audio troubles. Maybe that helps you give myself even more time in advance now to get to test that out. Because every week it seems like it's a new problem. All right, stop and record.